Well, good afternoon, Juno. It's just a little bit short of 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTLO News. We're in the middle of Juno afternoon, or, well, we're at the beginning of Juno afternoon, not quite the middle yet. Let's see. On today's show, we're going to be hearing about an amateur radio field day that will be held this weekend, and also we'll hear Arts Up. We'll also have a mudroom special. And let's see, for the weather, we're looking at mostly cloudy weather with scattered showers for the rest of today. Tonight's situation should be increasing clouds, lows 43 to 50, northwest winds 25 to 15 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. And then Friday, partly cloudy, warmer, highs around 76, light winds becoming southeast in the afternoon. And then Friday night, mostly clear. The Saturday weather is for sunny. The Sunday weather is for increasing clouds with highs around 72. Is this Juno? Are we in the right town?
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The builders of the proposed Northern Gateway pipeline from Alberta to British Columbia, Canada, say nearly 60% of First Nations along the planned route have signed on to become part owners. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, at least one group says that claim of widespread support is a sham.
It's clear there are some First Nations in Alberta and BC that support the 750-mile pipeline. An Enbridge spokesman, Paul Stanway, says the Aboriginal support is not 100%, but neither is it the wall of opposition that some opponents claim. Stanway says First Nations who sign on to the deal will share a 10% equity in the pipeline. That works out to about $280 million over 30 years.
It's part ownership, both the it's like buying shares in the pipeline project, so they would be with us owners of Northern Gateway.
The names of the Aboriginal partners won't be released because of contractual agreements. Stanway says for now support is split about evenly between Alberta and BC First Nations. But an alliance of BC First Nations says Enbridge is manipulating the facts. The alliance says it's checked with all the First Nations along the pipeline route west of Prince George and only two have signed on. Meanwhile, the chief of the Burns Lake Band says they have not signed on, but Albert Gerald says they are in talks with Enbridge, especially with so many members out of work.
From an economic standpoint, it has opportunity to create an anchor for a community that can begin building some venues to assist removing our communities from poverty, for example.
The public hearing process on the planned pipeline is at about the halfway point. Formal hearings will begin in September. That's when expert witnesses will testify under oath to the review panel. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Five Oklahoma tribes are meeting again as a group after not getting together for 6 years. As KGOU's Kirk Wartney reports, the council decided to support a federal lawsuit over water rights in the state.
The Intertribal Council of the Five Civilized Tribes approved a resolution backing the Choctaw and Chickasaw Nations' fight to win control over water in southeast Oklahoma. The two tribes say a treaty from the 1800s means the water is theirs, but the state of Oklahoma and Oklahoma City disagree. The federal lawsuit is currently before a court-appointed mediator. Speaking at the Intertribal Council, Choctaw Assistant Chief Gary Batten said the two tribes are fighting for what's theirs. This is the second intertribal action in support of the lawsuit. The Kiowa, Comanche, and Apache Intertribal Land Use Committee sent a letter in March to Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon expressing their support for the lawsuit filed by the Chickasaws and Choctaws. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
Native American veterans are being honored in Maine. According to the Bangor Daily News, Maine's governor proclaimed June 21st to honor the more than 800 Native veterans living in the state. The day was first observed a few years ago and was chosen because it's the anniversary of an alliance between Penobscot Chief Joseph Orono and George Washington in the 1700s. And in Canada, Aboriginal people are being recognized for their contributions to the country. Ceremonies and events are taking place for National Aboriginal Day. Some of the events include the Aboriginal People's Television Network hosting an outdoor concert in Winnipeg and Regina, including headliner Buffy St. Marie. There's also an official commemoration in Edmonton with activities taking place all day. And National Aboriginal Fashion Week kicks off in Regina. During this week in 1952, Oneida actor Graham Greene was born on the Six Nations Reserve in Canada. Greene is well known for his roles in Dances with Wolves, Thunderheart, and the recent Twilight series. He's also appeared in a number of television series and movies. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
I'm Billy Mills. As a grandfather and Olympic athlete, I know the importance of keeping kids healthy. The Children's Health Insurance Program in your state can provide your child additional health coverage, such as dental care, vision care, and emergency services. Enrolling your child can also help maximize health resources at your travel clinic. To learn more, contact your clinic or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW or visit insurekidsnow.gov.
Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're in tune with KTOO News. It's 5 minutes and 43 seconds after 3 o'clock. Let's go over that weather forecast just once more because it is so much fun to read. Look at what we're going to have this weekend. Saturday and Sunday, the Weather Bureau is telling us that we are going to have sunny weather. Saturday's high is to be between 79 and 84. Get out your shorts, Juno. Light winds should become southeast 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. Don't take a chill. Okay, and then Saturday night, we're looking at mostly clear weather with the lows around 54. And Sunday, we're looking at the clouds increasing, as they almost always do after a day like that, and the highs around 72. And then Sunday night, rain likely, lows around 50. So we are talking about a weekend to die for. Saturday, sunny Sunday, and a wonderful weekend coming up. Should clear up these little bit of rain showers that we're having sometime later today. And then Friday, the weather starts with the highs around 76. Friday night, mostly clear, lows around 54, what they usually are, the highs. And then Saturday and Sunday up in the 70s for the weekend. An amazing weekend. Let's listen to a little tropical music to get set for the tropical weather.
Our next speaker is Beth Weigel.
Not yet. We're not going to hear from Beth. Thank you. a little tropical music for Tropical Weekend coming up here in Juneau. The next thing we're going to hear is a series of basically personal recollections, remembrances, talks about various subjects that were put together by Amanda Compton, who works here at KTLO, in the form of a thing called Mudrooms. And each night during the previous winter season, she would hold there was a series of seven speakers who spoke for 7 minutes apiece at each one of these Mudrooms events. Here's Amanda introducing the speaker from one of those events and her talk.
Our next speaker is Beth Weigel. Beth grew up on a small rural farm in, I haven't seen her tonight. Okay. Beth grew up on a small rural farm in Pennsylvania and eventually struck out for Colorado, where she earned a PhD in human communication from the University of Denver. Maybe she'll tell us what that means, human communication. And I'm not making fun of the fact that she has a PhD. I'm just curious about the human communication. Beth moved to Juneau over a decade ago. Her experience teaching skiing and working for Gastineau Guiding piqued her interest in the significance of the outdoor classroom and nature interpretation. Beth has been the executive director of Discovery Southeast for the past 4.5 years. Two of the areas she is focusing on are ocean literacy and the health benefits of time spent in nature. Beth also teaches part-time at UAS and enjoys spending the winter months skiing or teaching at Eagle Crest. Her other hobbies include music, theater, and devising ways to reuse everything. Beth Weigel. I've got props.
I'm sorry. What would you like, Mark?
Okay, so Amanda, that basically means that when you have a PhD in communication, you agree to things like this, right? So I had my worst encounter with cabin fever in the winter of 2005-2006. And some of you might remember this winter because we were all waiting for the snow to arrive, right? So after the beginning of the year, the new year, the headline in the Juneau Empire reads, "And we will get snow in 2006, probably." Eagle Crest doesn't open till the end of January, and everybody is really just feeling quite feverish at this point. I personally am feeling really confined, almost crazy to the point I want to pull out my hair, and just totally tortured by this. Actually, come to think of it, it was a little less like a fever, and it was really more like cancer. And I was diagnosed with cancer. I was diagnosed actually in the fall of 2005 with large B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma of the left sinus passage. So that's a translation of I had some tumors in my head, and I was going to have to undergo both chemotherapy and radiation, and yes, I was going to lose all my hair, right? So, yes, I can tell. I can hear at this point perhaps that you're feeling a little worried about me, maybe feeling a little sorry for me and thinking, oh, gosh, a cancer story. But I'm going to break the number one rule in storytelling and give away the ending. I survive. So, before the whole confinement period sets in and I had to start treatment in mid-January, I decided it was probably a good idea since there's really no snow anyway and I can't really enjoy that little period of skiing before chemotherapy. I'd head back east to my parents' house and bank some time over the holidays with friends and family and just try to, relax before I had to start chemotherapy. So I go back east to the farmland there in Pennsylvania. We call it sometimes Pennsylvania there in the middle of Pennsylvania. And, I land and I realize that there's over 2 feet of fresh new snow. And I'm thoroughly excited at this point. I'm like, this is great. I can be outside in the snow a little bit. And so, the next day after I've gotten there and I head out and go for a walk and overnight it had gotten a little crust on the snow. And so I'm like trying to take a hike through the fields and I'm like post-holing every single step of the way. And I'm like,
why don't I have skis? This is ridiculous. This is stupid. Why didn't I bring my skis? And feeling a little downtrodden about that. But then I remember that we had played with these old wooden skis when I was a kid. And that I'm thinking, you know, my mom probably kept them because she keeps everything. So I race off to the milk house in our farmland area there. And of course, they're still there. And they're more wonderful than I could have remembered. Their beautiful shape and the little leather strap, you know, that's the binding, still there and usable. And so I grab them and I run outside. I find a little, you know, sloping area in the yard, and I put them on my feet, and I start to slide, and I'm like, I have no idea how to stop. I have no idea how to turn. I have no idea how to do anything, and I'm, you know, on my ass before you know it, and the skis are sliding on down the driveway, and away they go, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to figure this out. So I, you know, create myself a little challenge in the backyard. I create this nice big figure eight where I can, you know, slow myself down with the terrain and, you know, nice big rounded curves. And I go to the thrift store, get myself some 50-cent poles. You know, I pull out some paraffin that my mom uses to put up the jams and jellies, and I rub it on the bottom of the skis. And, you know, before long, I'm in business, and I'm off, and I'm all over the 100-plus acres of our farm enjoying this little bit of nature therapy that I can get in before I have to head back to Juneau and start chemotherapy. So that was a really great part of before treatment. But, of course, the inevitable happens. I head back to Juneau, and I have to start chemotherapy. And, of course, you know I'm going to lose my hair. And so I figure, you know, you try to have as much fun as you can with it. And, you know, you bring in your friends, you incorporate some fun around it. And so the first thing we did, you know, was we actually had fun kind of pulling it out because, you know, you really can just pull big, huge chunks of your hair out, and it's kind of entertaining. When you don't have anything else to do on a night. The next thing was that, you know, we just kind of cut my hair off blunt. And then we dyed it this really outrageous color because that was just going to be fun to have outrageous colored hair for a little while. So then I went around town with some outrageously colored hair. And, you know, I also acquired some really fun hats and scarves and some other wigs as well. And it was actually a time when, you know, I could develop some characters. You know, I was evolving and everything. And so, you know, I had my, you know, punk defiant girl, you know, with my outrageously colored hair. I had this really great hat that my friend made me that I could put on. And, you know, then I would be all chilled out and be like Rastafarian girl, you know, hanging out around town. And, you know, I got my grape hat. So that was really fun. But eventually, you know, it all comes off, and you're faced with sort of the idea that your head just has to stay warm. So you find yourself a nice, warm little thing that you can put on, and, you know, you got yourself your scarf, and I kind of started thinking, well, gosh, maybe I look kind of elegant, you know, like maybe I'm a movie star, and people are going to be surprised and, you know, thinking, who's that movie star around town, you know, put the sunglasses on. You know, you get your scarf on, and, you know, you think, yeah, people are going to think I'm somebody famous, right? Yeah, that's what they're going to think. I think probably in reality they just thought I looked like some sort of bug. I don't know. But it was fun, and, you know, it was a way to get through chemotherapy. And the last part of the treatment was going up to Anchorage and dealing with radiation. And for me, you know, radiation was really the most torturous part of that winter. It was torturous for a variety of reasons. First of all, because, you know, I had to go to Anchorage and live in an efficiency apartment in a bad part of town. I had to go to treatment every single day, and there was a lot of waiting for that, and there was really only 5 minutes worth of treatment, but you spent, you know, an hour or more there. And, yeah, there was, you know, some sickness involved and, you know, non-eating and things like that. So it was really torturous. But, and I don't want to scare anybody, but the most torturous part about the treatment was, and I just want to prepare you, okay? You prepared? Was the mask. This is the mask. Ooh, yes. And the mask was created in order to make sure that I could be staying on the table when I was having radiation. So on it was, you know, I'm kind of like Jason, right?
But it allowed me to have some fun with torturing the poor radiation techs. And, you know, the thing that I realized was, because I had friends come and help me, is that, you know, if you can just go outside, have a little bit of fun, and have your friends around you, that you can get through cabin fever and probably even cancer. Thank you.
Beth Weigel's very personal presentation at the Mudrooms events, seven speakers, 7 minutes each through the winter season. I understand we're going to probably have a repeat of it next year. Amanda Compton, who works here at the station, has put those sorts of things together for us. One more time, you want to take a quick shot at that weather forecast that's coming up. It's 322, but that's 322 on a day when the temperature is probably going to go up into the 70s, and then over the weekend we're talking about the temperature going up into the 70s. An amazing weekend for Juneau. And part of that amazing weekend is going to be a group of probably about a dozen ham radio operators, maybe two dozen, maybe three dozen. It's starting to grow on us a little bit, who will be getting together out at the Hagavig Fire Training Center and attempting to operate a radio station, an amateur radio station, under field conditions for 24 hours. With me is the past president of the Juneau Amateur Radio Club, Jack Gregson. And Jack, can you tell us a little bit more about what this field day operation is?
Well, it's really a quite a unique experience for ham radio operators nationwide, in that we operate for 24 hours straight, and we try to make as many contacts as we can within all the states and sections in the country and accumulate points. It's a huge contest, actually, but it's it more to demonstrate the fact that we can talk to anybody we need to whenever we need to in case of emergencies or anything else. And it's a fantastic hobby just for fun, too.
Now, is there's not usually a ham radio station set up out at the Fire Training Center, is there?
No. We set a special station up every year. We'll run normally a 1,200-foot wire delta loop antenna out to two towers out in the tundra out there, off a 106-foot tower the club owns, is where it will terminate, and then down into a van we'll park out there with radios in it, and we'll set up and we'll operate.
Now, do you run, is there a generator involved with all of this?
There'll be a portable generator. The class of station we are, we don't use power that's provided by the local utility. It's emergency generator-type power, and that's how we have to operate the whole time.
Now, this is going on in Juneau, but it's also going on like all over the United States, right?
All over the country. There's mm-hmm. There's huge stations everywhere, some of them with up to 20 radios. We run one radio here in Juneau, and we're a Class 1A station, and we use our club call sign, KL7JRC, and we'll be on the air from 10 in the morning on Saturday until 10 in the morning on Sunday. We'll set up tomorrow night and then tear down right after we shut down on Sunday.
Now, you were telling me before the program, I think the club has like 60 or 70 members. Are all those people going to be out there?
Probably not all of them, but a large number of them will be there. We'll also do some testing out there. We'll have what they call a VE session to test people who either want to get their first ham license, a technician license, or want to upgrade to general class or extra class. And from what I understand, there's going to be a whole bunch of people that will either take their first exam or will upgrade at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon when we have the session.
A VE session. What's VE stand for?
VE is a volunteer examiner, and there have to be three of them at the session, and there's a contact VE, and he's the one who supervises the session. So there'll be at least three of us out there conducting the exams. We'll correct them on the spot, and people will know whether they've made it or they haven't made it right there.
So hams, it's actually hams who give the examinations for
the
licenses?
Right. It's local ham operators. Most of them are extra class in order to be able to supervise the exams for all class licenses. And we'll just give the exams, and after you finish taking your exam, we'll correct it and let you know whether you made it or you didn't.
So there's a technician and a general and an extra class license. What's the difference between those?
Well, technician's basically the entry class license. It's the lowest level of license, and it requires probably the least amount of electronic knowledge and just knowledge of the rules and basic radio operations. And then as you move up into the general class and extra class, there's more electronics and theory in the exams and more difficult questions, more technical questions regarding operations, rules and laws that govern amateur radio and the actual electronics applications.
Jack, why do hams need so much technical knowledge? It sounds like engineers or something like that.
Well, you have to have a certain amount of technical knowledge even just to sit down and run a radio. I mean, especially one that transmits and receives. And with all the technology that's in the radios today, the digital signal processing and different types of amplifiers that can put out as much as 1,500 watts of power, there's some knowledge definitely required so you don't electrocute yourself or you don't do something that could ruin all the circuits in the radio. You have to have some knowledge of electronics and radio operation in order to do it.
Does anybody still build their own radio?
They sure do. Our club president, I know, has a radio that he built, and there are many other kits that you can build. I've built an SWR meter that will measure output on HF and VHF.
A little 10-tech. SWR, HF, VHF, lots of letters here. there is a real technical side to this.
Yes, there certainly is. But it's not something to be afraid of. The club here in town holds classes from time to time, and it's advertised in the newspaper and through the school system, and they have technician classes, general classes, and extra exam classes, and at the end of the 4 to 6 weeks of in-classroom work, we hold VE sessions and give the exams, and people have a chance to take the test, pass them, and upgrade their license or get their license for the first time.
I don't think they require Morse code anymore on the tests.
No, there used to be a requirement for 5 words a minute. That went away several years ago. Now I'm not sure exactly how many it was. It was right after I got my license in 2001, because I had to take the code at 5 words a minute to get my general and then my extra class license once you take it.
Does anybody use Morse code anymore?
Oh, there's a lot of folks that do, and it's one of the frustrating things for me because I did what I had to do to learn it, but now I'm not real proficient with it anymore, but I sure enjoy watching the folks out there that can send, and every once in a while we'll have a guest operator in. There was two or three years ago we had a Coast Guard chief in that was a retired radioman, and he could send code at a level that I couldn't even begin to think about.
Like a second language kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. What other kinds of things do ham radio operators do?
Well, there's several different things you can do with ham radio. There's digital operations, which include radio teletype and packet radio. The club has a repeater system here in town, and there's a phone patch on it. So if you have a technician license and you're operating on the right frequencies, you can actually make telephone calls over the repeater system. And I know personally, I carry my little handheld radio with me when I hike, and it'll work and hit the repeater system when cell phones won't work up in Granite Basin and several of the other more remote locations here in town.
So with ham radio, you could actually make a telephone call from Granite Basin where
yes.
your cell phone won't,
yes,
won't do it at all.
Right. If my cell phone won't work, I can hit the repeater up on Mount Roberts and actually make a telephone call home if I have to through the phone patch on the repeater system.
So what is a repeater? That's
It's a radio station up on the mountain, and what it does is it allows you to get better distances, and it receives on one frequency and transmits on another, so that people can talk back and forth, and they're interconnected here in town. They're linked, so there are several repeaters in the area, and if you're talking on Mount Roberts, you can be heard at Lena Point and on Peterson Hill and on Hoonah Mountain, if that's operational. I know some of our repeaters have been taken down lately so that other agencies can do some maintenance on the towers where we have the antennas.
So this radio that you're carrying with you when you're backpacking or hiking or something like that, is that very big?
No, it's about the size of a cigarette package. Hmm. And it has three bands on it and three different operating bands, and you can switch back and forth. But the 2-meter band is the one that the repeaters operate on here in Juneau.
Is there a big antenna involved with that?
On the handheld radio, no. It's a little rubber ducky antenna like you'd have on any little portable FRS radios, not much bigger than that, and easy to carry around. And
but you can talk all the way from Granite Basin to Lena Point with that
absolutely.
Little teeny radio in your hand.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. So what else, what other kinds of things can you do that, I mean, I'm thinking about cell phones here, and I'm wondering if there's any real reason for ham radio to be doing all this stuff when you can just pick up your cell phone and call around the world.
I think there's plenty of reasons for it, because if anything ever happened to the cell phones or the cell phone system, the amateur radio operators have a tendency to be able to get on and still communicate. In Alaska, ham radio operators, after you have a certain class license, get license plates with no registration fee from the state, and that's all based on the history of their communications and ability to communicate during the emergency, during the earthquake in 64. And so there's plenty of opportunities for ham radio. It's still a viable hobby and a viable communications method.
64 is a long time back. Do hams still respond to things like tornadoes and hurricanes, Katrina and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, they sure do. They have amateur radio emergency services, are referred to by hams as ARIES, and we have a local ARIES net here every Tuesday night in Juneau at 7 p.m., and folks check in and make sure that their stations and their equipment's working right. So if there were an emergency and ham radio operators were needed to provide emergency communications or assist government agencies, that we'd be able to just be able to go ahead and do that and fit right into the infrastructure and be a viable part of the communications during an emergency.
So if somebody was just curious about ham radio and wanted to kind of watch this field day operation thing, could they come out to the fire training center?
Absolutely. It'll be open. We ramp up and actually start operations at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, and it'll be open to the public. Anybody that would like to come is more than welcome to come out and look and operate. You can actually sit down there with a licensed operator, and if you want to try it, we can actually get you on the air, and you can actually talk to somebody if you'd like to.
Sounds like a really interesting, fun thing to maybe do on this warm weekend. Go operate a ham radio station outdoors in 70-degree weather. With the sun in Juneau. an amazing possibility for Juneau. Jack, thank you so much for taking a little time and telling us about Amateur Radio Field Day. And once again, it starts, it's at Hagavik Fire Training Center, which is out across from the DMV, kind of out there on that little road that goes off via turn where it says something like driver's license or something like that on the side of the road.
State troopers
in that same area. If you turn back in there and then you go back, there'll be some kind of signs that'll let you know where this is. And you said there's going to be 106-foot tower sticking up in the air. So
yes, we're hoping to have our tower there and have it up in the air back there, so you should be able to see that. And there'll be some cars there and just a good time for a weekend.
Wonderful. And that's from 10 o'clock Saturday morning, clear until 10 o'clock Sunday morning. 24 hours of ham radio operation contacting people around the world. Jack, thank you so much for telling us about this. What's your amateur radio call sign, by the way?
Kilo Lima 1 Alpha Sierra.
Kilo Lima 1 Alpha Sierra. So they all, for Alaska, they all start with the same set of letters.
KLNLWLAL.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Hey, thank you very much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 21st of June, 2012, summer solstice in the Northern Hemisphere, longest day of the year. When the Northern Hemisphere is tilted toward the sun, receives more direct radiation for longer periods of time each day. Only a slight tilt, but it makes the difference between winter and summer. Called midsummer, thought to be a time when plants have magical properties and spirits were active. Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream reflects that. Still celebrated a major holiday in Scandinavia and Latvia and Northern Europe, when people take a long weekend to dance around maypoles and fill their houses with fresh flowers and burn straw witches in bonfires. It's the birthday of the poet Adam Zagajewski, born in Lwów, Poland, 1945. He was involved in the Solidarity movement of the 1980s, wrote political poems, but a few years ago he said, "Poets must have firm opinions about life and death, but not political opinions. I don't think that tax reform legislation is any business of poets. It's the birthday of the poet Anne Carson, born Toronto, 1950. Studied Latin in high school, then ancient Greek, became a professor of classics. Her newest book, Antigone, an illustrated translation of the Greek tragedy Antigone, came out just last month. It's the 100th anniversary of the birth of Mary McCarthy, born in Seattle, 1912. Her parents both died during the influenza pandemic of 1918. She married Edmund Wilson, who encouraged her to write books of her own. She published her novel, The Group, in 1963. But her best book probably is her memoir, Memories of a Catholic Girlhood. Also remembered for her literary criticism, Gore Vidal said she was our most brilliant literary critic because she was uncorrupted by compassion. Carried on a famous feud with the playwright Lillian Hellman. Lillian Hellman referred to Mary McCarthy as a lady magazine writer. McCarthy called Hellman a dishonest writer. Every word she writes is a lie, including and the. It's the birthday of Ian McEwan, born in Aldershot, England, 1948, who British critics nicknamed Ian Macabre because he usually wrote about gore and grisliness, bestiality, incest. McEwan said, "I want something to happen in my stories, and I want to sort of push them to the edge. Most threats in life come from the unpredictable, random, cruel behavior of other people." His breakout novel was in 2001, Atonement. His most recent novel, Solar, a black comedy about climate change. And his newest book, Sweet Tooth, comes out at the end of summer, about a Cold War spy operation. Here's a poem by William Blake, Laughing Song. When the green woods laugh with the voice of joy and the dimpling stream runs laughing by, when the air does laugh with our merry wit and the green hill laughs with the noise of it, when the meadows laugh with lively green and the grasshopper laughs in the merry scene, when Mary and Susan and Emily with their sweet round mouths sing ha ha he, when the painted birds laugh in the shade where our table with cherries and nuts is spread, come live and be merry and join with me to sing the sweet chorus of ha ha he. William Blake's Laughing Song. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Minutes to four. You're in tune with KTOO News. This is Juno Afternoon, and in just a few minutes here, we should have Arts Up. Let's listen to a little music while we bring that on.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
Well, I've always liked prehistory. And growing up in the village, I remember being a little kid and asking my mom, why don't we live in teepees? And she just laughed and she said, we don't make those up here. And then I wanted to learn more about our people.
17-year-old Evelyn Combs goes to high school in North Pole, but her village is southeast of there, near Delta Junction. Healy Lake is where Evelyn's ancestors have lived for centuries. She comes from the Nultzitnek Athabaskan Caribou clan. Ever since she was little, she says she's connected to the place she calls home.
And one day I was swimming by my grandfather's house and I found a little end scraper and I took it to my Uncle Fred and he explained to me what it was and he told me that thousands of years ago one of our people was using this to scrape a hide. And that just blew my mind. And after that, every artifact that I found, I documented it. I took it to my Uncle Fred and he gave me lectures about it. He told me what they were, like, he was pretty much my professor at that time.
These days, Evelyn is expanding her education. For several seasons, she's worked with research teams from the Tanana Chiefs Conference. She's been digging and archiving alongside college students and professional archaeologists excavating in the area. Evelyn says she values education more than anything, and that learning is what makes her the happiest.
I think archaeology is the perfect job for me because, I mean, you get to go outside, you get to do research, you look at data, and you make conclusions from it, and that's one of all of those things are things that I really enjoy doing.
She plans to study archaeology in college and hopes to eventually return to live in Healy Lake. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
Tropical music in light of our tropical weather forecast. Have you heard about that tropical weather forecast?
My little AccuWeather thing that I have on my phone had a severe weather advisory for today. So I looked it up, and it was a warning that it was going to be hot and that we shouldn't panic.
That's totally appropriate for Juneau. It's supposed to be in the upper 70s Sunday.
I think they were saying 80.
All
right.
Yeah.
And in fact, it also said in that same little advisory thing that it hasn't been over 70 since last July.
Yeah, Saturday's forecast, 79 to 84.
Let's get the iced tea out now.
Yeah. I've been playing Hawaii music all day.
Excellent. Well, it's refreshing.
By the way, this is Nancy DeCherney, in case you just didn't know who was going to be on here this afternoon. She's going to give us some arts up information.
Because there are a few things to do, actually. Tonight at 7 o'clock, I'm sure you've had the Weber Dance folks in here, or the Juno Dance.
Actually, no, we did not.
Okay, well, the Juno Dance.
Could have been on an earlier in the week. I was out at a cabin.
Oh, I just out of touch, you were off the grid.
Hey, I went off the grid. I spent 2 days on Cowie Meadow.
Oh, lovely.
Two sunny days out in Cowie Meadow. Mm. It was delightful.
What's that? That's very nice.
Yeah, stayed in the cabin out there.
Yeah, well, anyway, Juno Dance Unlimited brings the Weber Dance Company annually. Mm-hmm. They are here in town, and they will be doing a public performance. It's always delightful, out at Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. You can get tickets at the Jack. You can call us. You can get them at Hearthside Books. You can call Juno Dance Unlimited. It's really a wonderful opportunity to see some really fine dance performances. Gold Town's showing a funny little film called Poo Poo Padoop. I just like saying it.
Hey. Are you going to appear at the beginning and pronounce the title for us?
No, but you can hum around singing it to yourself.
Yeah.
So Friday, we've got, thank goodness, a sunny day for concerts in the park.
All right.
And concerts in the park this year are at 5:30, so just get off work, go over and get a picnic or something, and
who's
come on down.
Who's going to be the concert master here?
We have performing the Hillbilly Honeys.
Uh-huh.
Juno Pride Chorus will be singing. This is in anticipation. They're heading out for bigger places. And then Daughters of the New Moon. Perfect for them. Yeah.
Hey, and, I'm liking it.
So, of course, the new Marine Park configuration means that you should bring your own seating arrangement.
Okay.
Or plan to dance, is how I look at it. but it's going to be a lovely evening, and let's get out and enjoy it. Then you can go directly from there, actually, up to the tram and hear live music at the tram with Tom Loker. He's in the Timberline Bar and Grill at the top. Mm-hmm. So it could be a really nice evening. 9 p.m. Scorcher at the Rendezvous, and I'm not exactly sure what this is all about.
Mm.
But it says KXLL Selectors DJ, Dr. DJ, DJ Taco Todd. I don't know. All kinds of fun stuff happening over at the Rendezvous at 9 p.m. And then you can go see Poo Poo Padoop again.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Saturday at 9 o'clock in the morning, Holy Trinity is having a plant sale and bake sale. This is a fundraiser for that church that's up on the corner of 3rd and Gold. And it's finally time to plant, so you might as well go get some plants.
Yeah.
So there you go. And let's see, there is at 11 o'clock in the morning a wild guided tour of the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. There will be local experts on hand to lead a garden walk and to explore the low tide area and the birds that are out there. If you've not ever been out to the Arboretum, you should make it a point to go, and I think this weekend would be the right one.
Mm-hmm.
It's just beautiful out there. It's an amazing, amazing gift to this community. Anyway, that's at 11. And then at 12:30, there's the Big Splash, a free and fun swimming event for fathers, father figures, and their children at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, which is on Riverside Drive. It's free lunch and prizes and all sorts of fun. And it's indoors, but it's in the pool. So it's seasonal.
Cool. Cool in the water.
Yes. Uh-huh. At 2 o'clock and at 4 o'clock, Holy Trinity is having cream tea, think scones with jam and whipped cream, little sandwiches and cookies. Tea time, British style, at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. You can do that at 2 or at 4. And, you know, who doesn't like a cucumber sandwich?
I agree. I'm tasting cucumber sandwich. Watercress.
Yes, watercress. That's very good. Little ham on them. Okay, very nice. And I really like tea and china cups, and I'm sure they'll have that. There are a few other things going on Saturday. I forgot to put down what time the Pea Flag and Sigla picnic is over at Sandy Beach, but that's, I think, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. And as always, you can go to our website and check on the calendar and find all these things right there. At 6 p.m., it is the Bishop Kenny 75th celebration. This is at the church up the hill, which I'm going to forget in a minute. And then at 8 o'clock.
Oh, at the cathedral.
The cathedral, yes.
Okay.
And you can get tickets for that at Hearthside Books. We don't have them at the Jack. At 8 p.m., there is Femme Fatale. It's a sort of a junior run of the Femme Fatale thing happening at the Rendezvous. And at 10 p.m., there's a glow party at the Viking. I don't know what that's all about.
I don't know what that is.
But you'll probably be sunburnt and therefore glowing.
Yeah. By then, we all will.
Yeah. So it's a fun day on Saturday. Lots of things to do outside and lots of things to do with your friends. On Sunday, it's going to be a Sunday sunny market with music at the Jack on the lawn. There will be music by the string ensembles, and I'm not sure if anybody else will be there, but come on down. I know we're getting produce in from Gustavus, so if you're looking for lettuce and that sort of stuff, this is the time and place. Just come and enjoy the lawn, if nothing else.
We're saying 72 degrees for Sunday.
So chilly.
Delightful temperature.
Perfect temperature. Right? Absolutely perfect. And let's see, at 1:30 there is a liturgy and potluck also in celebration of Bishop Kenny's 75th. That'll be out at the Shrine of St. Therese. Let's see.
What time?
That's at 1:30 in the afternoon. There's international folk dancing at 6 p.m. at the Racquet Club downtown. On Monday, the Perseverance Theater does this great thing, Alaska Summer Theater Intensive. Mm-hmm. This is like camp for adults.
Yeah.
So you should just go.
Yeah.
All kinds of really exciting things to do. You can go on their website and kind of get the full scope of it. I think it was described in the paper today as well, so you can get the Empire and check that out. It's a really, I think this might be the third or fourth year that they've done it, and it's a really wonderful opportunity for people who are interested in the theater, interested in writing, any of that sort of stuff. So do that. Also on Monday at 5 p.m., 5:30, somewhere in that neighborhood, we'll be doing an arts roundtable. This is our monthly opportunity for people who are involved in the arts in any way or interested in the arts to just get together, talk with one another. I think this the topic for this Monday will be our coming seasons so that we can all compare and perhaps put together marketing packages and stuff like that. But it might be an opportunity for you to get a little heads up on what's coming in the coming year. On Tuesday, there is just sort of the usual stuff going on. There's a Toastmasters Club at St. Paul's. There's a Aware has some things going on. Wednesday, it looks like sort of, Juno Marching Band rehearsals gearing up for the 4th of July. And that's about it, really. It's, just time. Oh, wait a minute. On Thursday at 6:30 p.m., there's Night in Istanbul. And I believe this is a KXLL event.
Yeah.
And that's happening at Zephyr. Join us for a special evening of Turkish cuisine and entertainment, complete with whirling dervish belly dancers.
And by Thursday, we'll be back in the rain a little bit. It'll be cooler, so it'll be the perfect time to move back in and do a little Turkish evening.
Yeah. So anyway, I hope to see it. Most of these things.
Hey, Nancy, thank you. Thank you for lining out our sunny weekend. You've been listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News in Juneau. KTOO FM broadcasts on 104.3 on the FM band in downtown Juneau and Douglas, and we also broadcast on a set of translators to carry our signal around Juneau area and to stretch our signal out into some places where it may not be heard directly. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, you can get a better signal on K276 AF by tuning your radio to 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO can be heard at 101.7. Gustavus listens to K201 AM and hears KTOO FM on 88.1. In Dahuna, you can hear KTOO signal on 91.9. The translator is K220 BT. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, KTOO is on K210 AS at 89.9 on the FM dial. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau. We're on digital channel 871. KRNN, our sister station, is on 872, and KXLL, our other sister station, is on 873. And we're also online at www.ktoo.org with 24-hour streaming.